This is Phil Ferrand, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 240. 240. Unbelievable. 240. It's not going to be too long before we're going to be at 250, and then we're going to be at 258, which will be the 5 years worth of podcasts anniversary. Unbelievable. So that'll be like, what, 18 podcasts away, something like that. My voice is a little sore today, a little tired, I should say. It's not really sore, it's just tired. A little tired today. I've been talking a lot the last couple of days. I've been just getting over this little virus thingy that I've had. Stinking viruses. But I've been making some progress on that. I decided to go all natural, au natural, on this one because, when was it? Sunday night, I think. I had just kind of been eating and exercising and getting lots of rest. And I think Sunday night I decided, I'm going to take some cold medicine because, you know, then I'll be refreshed in the morning. And wow, after about 20 or 30 minutes after taking that cold medicine, I was miserable, far more miserable than I was before I took the cold medicine. So I decided, that's it. I'm not taking cold medicine. I'm just going to eat well. I'm going to drink lots of water. I'm going to get plenty of rest, and we'll just see. And it's been kind of interesting because I haven't ever had the full breakdown, sneezy, you know, coffee, that kind of stuff. It's just been this little bit of sinus congestion, little bit thing. And so I'm just kind of waiting to get cleared through that. So the other reason my voice is a little bit tired is I did go over to a local university and chatted with some music students about Finale that I had written and life, the universe and everything. And so that was fun, but that was basically an hour of talking. And I was drinking water through some of it, but then I forget to drink water. And then when I forget to drink water, then of course your voice starts getting sore. So I'm a little sore, but we're going to be tired, but we're going to be okay. Anyways, this week I'm still working on getting all the parables tied into the different books for this 24-book series that I'm working on called Windfall. It was going a little rough, and then it got going a little better. I was getting a little concerned that, am I actually going to be able to match these all up? And then I hit kind of a little, got enthused there, and was like, hey, this is how I can do it. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. I'd like to do much more planning in terms of what happens in each book, but each book is 300 pages, and I'm thinking that I may just need to sit down and start writing, because things happen when you're writing that are hard to plan for. It's like when I was writing, I am a little tired today, which is not unnormal, so I apologize for yawning. Things happen when you're writing, like happened in Grumpy Old Prophets. I'm in the second book and I'm muddling forward, and all of a sudden it opens up and I have this idea where, you know, I was going to talk about the women who traveled with Jesus, and then they become this major part of that book, and they're in the second, third book, and they're in the fourth book. I mean, it's just, it changed the direction of the whole series, and I had no idea it was coming. So I really think that it's going to be one of those types of things It is raining. I'm sure you can hear it. It is raining and raining. I'm sure it's going to be one of those types of things where I'll get started and kind of know where I'm going, but until I write it, until I actually write it, I'm not going to know for sure. So probably after I get the parables mapped out and then have a better idea what's supposed to kind of be happening in each book from just like a two-line synopsis, I'm just going to start. The first book is fairly easy because I have a screenplay based on the first book. And so the first book, I should be able to pilot it fairly quickly. However, I do have to set up a lot of the atmospheric things on that book. Oh, wait, I need to do this. Maybe? My windows are fogging up. Oh, yeah, that's a little better, I think. Yeah, there we go. Get the right setting on the air conditioner. Taking a drink of water. So, the first book I expect to be easier than the rest, although the first book is where you set up all the quote-unquote atmospheric elements. Like, I have to have a mechanism to do exposition. Because you can either use cabbage heads, or you, like, you have one character who's just goofy, silly, and he goes, "So, Captain, what does it mean when this happens?" And that's... We call that the cabbage head in nitpicking. Or you can use other mechanisms, and I'm going to use other mechanisms. So I have to get those mechanisms set up and figured out, and figure out how many of those mechanisms are there and whose voice they're going to have. Because we're going to, I want this to be a discussion about organizations and about individuals and different ways of looking at life, the universe, and everything. And so because of that, I need to have multiple viewpoints. I need to have a viewpoint that is the standard party line. You know, the standard party line from the main organization. And then I need to have other viewpoints that are sort of the grumbling, rebellious viewpoint. And I have to figure out how to make all that work. And I'll have to do it in the first book. So once I get those things figured out in the first book, then of course they'll become set pieces that I'll be involved in the other books. So I'm really, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And that means that even though I've got a screenplay for the first book, it very possible is I'll get the first book done and then I'll just have to go back and rewrite it again. So it's the sooner I get started with the first book, the better. But I do want to have a fairly solid idea of what I'm supposed to be accomplishing in each book before I get started. So more thinking, more checking, more notes. But I'm, the more I work on this series, the funner it's getting for me. Wow, it is really coming down. this week, well, first of all, the talk over at the local university, it was good, it was fun, you know, and it was fun afterwards. People came up and said, you know, how much Finale meant to them. And you know, that's fun. It's fun to hear that something you worked on, you know, actually has made a difference and made it some meaning in people's lives. And so, you know, life's good. And it's nice to know that has occurred. But I was asked at one point, you know, do you regret selling out? And I have to answer, no, I didn't. You know, I told them honestly, if I had done it for another 3-4 years, I would have been independently wealthy. But, you know, I got out at just the right time so I could start the Nitpicker's Guide so they could get it at just the right time. So, you know, I'm not unhappy at all about getting out when I did, and everything's worked out just fine. And tonight I get to go home and be with my wife. Yay! They have to come in tomorrow if there's problems, but, you know, either way, I'm heading into the weekend at this point, and I really enjoy my weekends. I get to spend more time with my wife, I get to spend more time writing, I get to take my parents grocery shopping, because they're beyond writing now at this point. It's good. It's good, good, good. Life is good. Anyways, this week, I came across an interesting article on artificial intelligence and a discussion about why we should think about the threat of artificial intelligence. It was a reaction to a New York Times article about the speed of artificial intelligence and how that, you know, we're getting to the place where we've got cars that are self-driving, we've got voice assist, we've got Watson, who's answering questions better than the best Jeopardy players. I mean, you've got all these things that are happening with increasing rapidity. And the potential even to have, like, service calls be handled by these huge robotic systems, artificial intelligence systems that answer questions for people. I mean, there's a lot of really cool stuff happening. Granted, it's not all perfect yet. But it is coming along, and it's doing pretty good. You know? I mean, one of the things they were saying that might be an interesting future potential because of all this artificial intelligence is that all those call center operations that moved over to India and the Philippines because it was so much cheaper, they might eventually be coming back here, not because jobs are going to be coming back here, but because the software that runs to do that same job is just going to be running in the States. And it'll all just be software, as opposed to a human on the other line. And of course, we've talked about this before, that there is going to be this huge change, which I do not believe will be... I do not have an optimistic view of how the change is going to happen. There's going to be this huge change where jobs, lots of jobs, are going to disappear. And the days of just kind of selling your mind and selling your manual labor skills and menial mental skills and being able to get a job and do those things is going to disappear. Because most of that stuff is going to be done by computers. Someday, eventually, even my skill set is going to be eclipsed by computers, because literally, business people will just tell computers, we want this data collected, we have to be able to enter this data, you know, yada, 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 and the computers will just build it. Because honestly, what I do at the end of the day is not that complicated. It's just not that. I do the same things over and over and over and over again. And a lot of the jobs we have, they're basically shuffling data from one place to another. Those aren't going to be needed. So there is certainly some uncertainty about how this is all going to work out from a societal viewpoint. But there is no uncertainty about the fact that everything is moving very rapidly now. And not only are we developing artificial intelligence systems, developing cars that can drive themselves. Robotics is really moving now with biped and quadruped robots. You know, you've got things like emotional computing, they call it, that's coming up, where computers can actually look at people's faces and figure out what emotions they're feeling. And so that's all just going to get tied into the customer support stuff. And I mean, it's quite a world that is coming. Well, on top of all that, then there has been some people that have been sort of raising the whole specter of the science fiction outcomes. Because anybody who watches any science fiction for any amount of time will tell you what they think is coming. And it ain't no utopia. What they think is coming is the rise of sentience in machines and the rise of the self-preservation instinct in machines. And as soon as that happens, things are going to get bad. Because that's kind of the standard science fiction-y thing. And a lot of people just scoff at that and say, oh, yeah, that's just science fiction. That's not going to happen in real life. Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, now that things are actually headed this direction, it is getting harder and harder to be skeptical. The article that I read does say that some of the predictions that are out there about us achieving this real artificial intelligence in the next 20 or 30 years, where the computer is actually aware and the computer's intelligence surpasses ours, that it's only 20, 30 years away. And there is some quibbling about that. People are saying, no, it's more like 40 or 50, blah, 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 blah. But the guy that wrote the article makes a good point. He said, one way or another, if we all continue and everything continues on, in 100 years, we're going to have computers that are probably more intelligent than we are. In terms of being able to recall facts, in terms of being able to process information, and potentially even in terms of being able to program themselves. And when some of that stuff happens, then who knows where it's going next. And the point that the article was writing was, you know, a century from now, nobody will care about how long it took. They will only care about what happens next. He says, there might be a few jobs left for entertainers, writers, woohoo, and other creative types, but computers will eventually be able to program themselves, absorb vast quantities of new information, and reason in ways that we carbon-based units can only dimly imagine. And they will be able to do it every second of the day without sleep or coffee break. Well, what's interesting is there are skeptics out there that are saying, no, this isn't going to usher in a world where there is abundance for all. What's actually going to happen is these powerful AI sources might then threaten us more directly by battling us for resources. This author says there's a dark new book by James Barat called Our Final Invention, Artificial Intelligence and the End of the Human Era. And he says in that the drive for self-preservation and resource acquisition may be inherent in all goal-driven systems of a certain degree of intelligence. And his premise there is that if you get this entity and it becomes intelligent and it has any goals at all, it's going to want to continue to meet those goals. And so it's going to calculate constantly what it needs to meet those goals and take whatever steps it needs to take to meet those goals. It's like, as I've said to friends multiple times over the last several weeks, that the truth is that when an organization forms up, or an entity forms up, or even an individual comes to life, the primary goal of that organization, entity, or individual is to continue to exist. And it really doesn't matter what the organization says in terms of their goals and ambitions and that kind of stuff. You really will never know the truth of the organization until the organization's existence is threatened. And then at that point, you start finding out for sure whether they believe their own press. And in the same way, the point is being made that if we have these systems that can program themselves, if we have these systems that have massive amounts of information, will they not also then, when given a task, come to believe in the importance of that task being completed, and then decide to allocate resources to themselves to get that task accomplished. I'm getting my mail, one moment. And once they start allocating those resources, will those resources not come into direct competition with us and what resources we need? And if they do, then will these systems have the capability to decide to start depriving us of resources? So, you know, it's a legitimate question. It's a legitimate question. The guy in the article does point out that while we have Watson and Deep Blue and some of these other expert systems, that none of those systems to this point have given us any indication, I'm backing into my garage, one moment, that they have any desire to take resources away from us. I mean, Watson is a bunch of computers that sits in a room, you ask it a question, it answers. It does not appear at this point to be plotting the overthrow of the United States government or anything like that. You know, it's just answering questions. Same thing with Deep Blue. You know, you give it a chess problem and it solves the chess problem. That's it. And so we certainly haven't made any kind of a transition yet to that. But what's interesting about this to me is I think there is an underlying assumption that is made by many of these scientists that is understandable, but it may or may not be true. And that is that consciousness is simply a result of computing power. That consciousness will spontaneously arise as soon as there is enough information or enough programming. And I'm just not certain that's true. It may. It would not shake my faith in the world if a computer became sentient. Because in order for a computer to become sentient like that, it had to be built upon intelligent brains. So it wasn't just like somebody took a bunch of rocks and threw them in a room that tilted around, and it tilted around and tilted around and tilted around and banged around and flipped upside down, and eventually a sentient computer walked out. Okay, that's not going to happen. So there was design, there was planning, there was building, there was creativity and intelligence that went into it, and that machine then inherited those things. So I don't think that's any kind of an affront at all to my belief in a grand designer. But as we have all along with artificial intelligence, in underestimating how difficult it is, we may be underestimating the difficulty of producing a stable consciousness, a stable sentience. Well, quasi-stable in the case of human beings. And it may be that we will be able to put together huge computing machines that can spew knowledge and analyze and this, that, and the other. But after they've answered the question, that's going to be it. They'll just sit there and wait for another question. You know, and maybe they'll be asked, wouldn't it be better if you were in charge and we weren't? And maybe it will say yes, but that'll be the answer to that question, and then it will move on to the next question. Because sentience and consciousness may be more than just processing power and information. I don't know for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if it is more. You know, there are phrases in the Bible when it talks about the creation of man that are interesting, and that God formed man out of the dust of the earth, and then he breathed into him, and man became a living soul. And maybe we'll be able to form things out of the earth and make these wonderful approximations of humanity, these wonderful approximations of knowledge and wisdom and intelligence. But getting across that final hurdle of not just appearing to be sentient and conscious, but really being sentient and conscious, that may be a bigger hurdle than we're expecting. And I suppose we won't know that we've actually made it there. How would we actually know if we made it there? Would we need a robot to get offended at its master and kill its master before we knew? I don't know. It's an interesting question. I'm sure there is more to come. This is Fel Farrand, and I have made it home.